One of my biggest worries about charities that don't research is their hearts are in it. They think they're doing good, but they actually might be doing harm. So as you're vetting, transparency is huge. Do they actually have research? Do they share that research proactively? Are they willing to let you look behind the curtain?
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. Welcome to The Lisa Show. And before we begin formally, because, you know, I'm so formal, I just need to tell you that the other day I was driving home from work and I really needed an emotional support baguette. As one does. And I went to Trader Joe's. And did you know that you can get a whole baguette, an entire crusty baguette for $2? I just feel like this is information that we should be sharing with each other because it's just right there. And to be very clear, I'm not paid to promote any of this. We're nonprofit. But I would be for profit under the right circumstances, like crusty baguettes, nachos, or a nacho brand kit, or barbecue items. Smoked meats. What else? Yeah, that about covers it. Okay, one more thing before we get started. Wendy commented on the Lisa Show socials and took the quiz to see what kind of helper she was. You're a responder. Way to go, Wendy. That is awesome. We need responders. Boots on the ground. I love it. And if you haven't taken the test to see which kind of helper you are, go over to the Lisa Show socials and take the quiz. It's really fun. This is the fourth episode of our Doing Good Better series. And if you're like me, you probably want to donate money to good causes and make the world a better place. But you also probably know it's not always that easy. I remember a few years back, this article was going around, and I don't remember the title, but the gist of it was that all these charities we think are so good actually have these huge problems. You know, the nonprofit you donate to every Christmas, well, they're currently being sued by three states because of all their internal corruption. Or even though this organization says they're doing good, 95% of donations are being used to build the CEO's second home in Belize, you know, and I'm exaggerating, but only just a little bit. I know I'm not the only one who has seen a familiar name in the news and immediately thought, oh, I know who this is. That person's doing a lot of good in the world, only to read the rest of the headline and feel my stomach drop. It can be really disheartening to see that these people and organizations that seem to be doing good in the world aren't really doing good. And it makes me really wary. I don't want to donate to a bad organization, but I'm not an expert on vetting charities. How can I be sure my money is actually going where I want it to go? How do I know the CEO of this organization isn't swimming in gold coins like Scrooge McDuck, you know? Or even if the organization seems to have its heart in the right place, how do I know they know what they're doing? And it makes me wonder, what if it's just better to not donate at all? On this episode of Doing Good Better, I've had the opportunity to talk to some experts on vetting organizations, people who study social impact for a living. I asked Aaron Miller, Jill Piacitelli, and Chris Yaden, how do you decide where to donate? And I was surprised in a couple of ways. First of all, I was surprised by how simple their answers were. I always thought vetting organizations was really hard and complicated, but after just a few conversations, I felt pretty confident that I can do it, that I can donate my time and money where it will do the most good. But I was also surprised by some of the myths that these experts busted, myths I totally believed until now. And the way I look at charities has completely changed. I hope by the end of this episode, you'll have the tools to intentionally give your time and money to causes you care about and organizations that deserve it. I have here Aaron Miller from the Ballard Center for Social Impact at Brigham Young University. And a huge shout out to Aaron, by the way. We did not intend to use him in almost every episode of the season so far, but he just had so many fantastic insights that we couldn't let anything go to waste. Aaron introduced me to some terms the Ballard Center uses to measure the good that organizations are doing in the world.
There's a less good version of it today that a lot of organizations do where they measure not impact, but they measure a thing that we call outputs. we delivered this many books to these parts of the world, or we provided this many hours of training, or we provided this many meals. That doesn't actually measure change. Mm-hmm. That's sort of like the work you're doing, but it doesn't say how the work you're doing actually improved the world. And those measures are the ones that we encourage people to look past. Like, okay, the outputs are there. It's good that they're measuring them. But how do people's lives actually change as a result? That's the part you have to figure out.
Like Aaron said, it's not just the number of books or donations or volunteer hours that matter. It's how people's lives change as a result. And the Ballard Center uses three different words to differentiate between three different measures. An output is just what the organization is doing. For example, for a charity fighting malaria, an output might be, we gave out this many mosquito nets. An outcome is how the situation improved. Maybe the outcomes would be fewer people got malaria. And then impact is how much of the outcome the organization can take credit for. Because there are always confounding variables. Maybe fewer people got malaria because the weather was cooler that year and there weren't as many mosquitoes. So the impact would be something like, in a village we gave malaria nets to, malaria went down 15% compared to a very similar neighboring village in the same year, with the other contributing factors being pretty much the same. So we can confidently say that 15% decrease in malaria is due to our mosquito net program. And that would be the impact. I find these distinctions really helpful for understanding whether a charity is really doing any good. But these are terms the Ballard Center has come up with. A lot of charities will say on their website, impact, and then you click over to the page and it's a list of outputs. We delivered this many mosquito nets, dug this many wells, served this many meals, and it doesn't actually say anything about what the real impact was. So I asked Aaron, well, how do you identify the outcomes and especially impact on an organization's website? What does that look like?
Yeah, this is a great question. So first thing you do is go to their website if they have one. And if they do, you want to look for an annual report. Sometimes it'll say impact. Sometimes it'll say about our work. And then you want to look at what they're measuring, like what the actual measures are. If they're measuring, we delivered this many meals, we provided this many hours of training, that's fine, but it's not probably the organization you should pick. Instead, you want to look for the organization that says 83% of our participants had a higher income 5 years later, or 9 out of 10 of the kids in our programs graduated from college.
I love this because it's so simple. Once you know what you're looking for, it's really easy to look on any organization's website and see if they have it. But I never even thought of looking for these long-term impacts before. There was also something else Aaron said that really surprised me. I've always assumed that if you want to do good in the world, you should donate to a nonprofit because for-profit organizations aren't about social impact, right? They're about making money. But it turns out there are some for-profit organizations that are built around social impact too. And sometimes they do even more good than nonprofits.
The old model that all do-good work has to happen through a nonprofit has been largely ditched. You can build a for-profit company that has a social impact, and there are quite a few of these growing.
And that's
the
just
world.
As effective or even more effective?
In many cases, more effective, actually.
Wow.
Because it can do its work more sustainably because it has a profit-making activity that keeps the organization in business. I'm on the board for an organization called University Impact. And what we actually do is we look for and vet startup businesses. Sometimes they're nonprofits, sometimes they're for-profit. And we have the students write due diligence memos describing the quality of this investment, both will it produce a financial return, but also will it have a positive impact in the world. And there are so many cool ideas out there that would just blow your mind.
Aaron told me about just one of these cool ideas, training beekeepers in South Africa.
There's a beekeeping business in South Africa that's teaching people how to become beekeepers as a side hustle and tapping into international markets for honey. And so these beekeepers can produce honey in addition to whatever other income activity they have. They can produce honey and then they sell this honey totally for profit, but raises income levels for everybody who participates. And that's a model called a micro-franchising model that was partly innovated at BYU, actually. And that's just one example.
The idea that a single investment could continue to do good several times over is a really helpful thought. But as Aaron and I talked about for-profit organizations doing good, I realized that we had another example of this that you may remember from Episode 1, The Other Side Academy, or TOSA. The Other Side Academy is a for-profit organization, not because they charge the students who go there, the services are all free, but because they don't depend on donations or government aid. They support themselves through the thrift stores and moving company run by the students. And the Other Side Academy is not only self-sustaining, but it's having a great impact on the lives of its students. Now I'd like to introduce you to Jill Piacitelli, who we also heard from last episode. She is the associate director of the Ballard Center, and she told me how she decides where to give her money, time, and attention. She introduced me to the concepts of affinity and proximity.
How do I vet an organization that I want to give time and money to? For me, at this point, it's really quick. We teach this concept of affinity and proximity. When you're at high affinity, meaning you really care about the issue, and high proximity, meaning it's close to you. That's sort of the golden zone to work in when you're trying to change or work on a social issue. I am old enough that I have very clearly determined what I have affinity for, what I really care about in life, and what's close enough to me that I can give it my time, my attention in some layered ways. And so that's how I vet, is I pick affinity and proximity. What's in my life right now that feels like a curriculum I should be paying attention to and investing my time and efforts into? And then I just try to direct a clear stream of donations and time to it.
For Jill, picking an organization isn't about a one-off donation. She chooses issues that inspire her and that she feels she can consistently give her money, time, and attention to. She's a great example of someone who falls in love with the problem. Jill also told me that when she's vetting an organization, she looks for something called a theory of change.
The other tool I would throw in there, this is a quick one that we teach our students to use, is we ask them to look for a theory of change. A theory of change is essentially an if-then statement, which is, if we do this, and that's usually your programs, if we purchase malaria nets and train people on how to use them, then deaths in these particular regions will go down. That's a theory of change. And often, organizations just essentially don't have well-developed theories of change. And so one of the quick ways to look for an effective place to put your time or your dollar is to find out if they have a theory of change.
Seems simple, right? An organization should know why it's doing what it's doing and how its interventions are going to help. I know next time I look into a charity, I'm going to look for their theory of change. Now let me introduce you to Chris Yaden, CEO of Sapria, an organization that exists to prevent sexual abuse and help survivors heal. Chris had some insider insight into the other qualities to look for when vetting charities.
The thing about charities, and this really helps with the vetting, is charities that are full of integrity, they really take to heart their responsibility of being a public charity, which means they are accountable to and transparent with the public. So when the public's vetting a charity saying, is this a group I should give to? Or even bigger funders are doing that type of vetting. If the charity is only storytelling and not letting you look behind the curtain, if you will, not letting you see where the potential dirty laundry is, that is a huge red flag. And so charities that have integrity are extremely transparent and proactively transparent. It's not just a marketing pitch. Don't get me wrong. At charitable work, we have to be experts in storytelling, right? And we should be experts in storytelling. But if it's just the storytelling, if we're not willing to share outcome research or even do outcome research, or have third parties do research on us, that's a huge red flag. So at Sapria, we take that very seriously. We started doing research the very first program we did 9 years ago. And that transitioned into third-party research done by university professionals One of them here at Brigham Young University that really validated that what we were doing was working. One of my biggest worries about charities that don't research is their hearts are in it. They think they're doing good, but they actually might be doing harm. So as you're vetting, transparency is huge. Do they actually have research? Do they share that research proactively? Are they willing to let you look behind the curtain? If any of those start falling apart, that's a huge red flag that a donor should maybe question, should I be supporting this group?
Like Chris explained, transparency is really important, and it can get obscured by flashy stories that tug on our heartstrings. I've definitely been in this position where I'm really moved by the story of a child who got to go to a school because of this great nonprofit, or wow, this charity saved this person's life. How fantastic is that? And then I give impulsively rather than intentionally. It's not bad for a charity to have these great stories. I mean, they help put a face to social issues. But ultimately, we want to be intentional about how we donate, not impulsive. And that means making sure the charity we donate to is transparent about how its donations get used. I also like that Chris pointed out the importance of doing research to measure impact and make sure the interventions are really working, because this is something Aaron Miller brought up as well. Unfortunately, not every organization will be doing this kind of intensive research to make sure their interventions actually work. Because even though it's really important, it does take up a lot of time and money. Aaron also pointed out that we can always do our own research and look up what the science says about a certain type of intervention and whether or not it works.
Those organizations will typically have learning resources that they point to. But another piece of advice I recommend is through Google and other means, find the experts, find the people who know about this stuff. It's kind of an intimidating place, but Google Scholar is a great resource for type in the problem and see who are the academics writing about this. And most academics are not getting emails from random strangers saying, I'm fascinated by what you're studying. Can you tell me more? They're right. Going to love it and be excited to talk with
okay,
you.
Okay, good, because I am and I want to contact them. I can personally attest to how willing most academics are to share their research. Here at The Lisa Show, we are quite often going through Google Scholar and tracking down emails of random scientists and begging them to tell us about their own research. That's how we get in touch with a lot of our guests. And they are so wonderful and so generous with sharing their knowledge with us. And it sort of makes sense, right? Everyone's a little bit of a nerd about something, right? Well, imagine someone coming up to you about whatever you're a nerd about, politics or auto repair or which adaptation of Pride and Prejudice is the best, and asking you to talk to them about it for a while. I mean, that would just be a dream come true. And by the way, are you depressed or are you happy? Because that will really tell me which adaptation of Pride and Prejudice you're going to need, because there are a lot of versions. Did I talk about the BBC one? No, okay, I'm getting off of the point. Anyway, trust me, these researchers are nerds just like us. They're just waiting for someone to ask them about their research. It will make their day, and you'll learn a lot. Speaking of people who have turned their passion into easily accessible research, Aaron told me about something called Ballard Briefs, which are another great resource for anyone who wants to get started learning about a social issue.
At the Ballard Center, actually, we have a resource we've been working on for a while now called the Ballard Brief. And if you go to ballardbrief.org, you'll find student-authored briefings on a variety of social issues around the world. We have over 100 of these now on the website.
Amazing.
The number continues to grow. You can search through their briefs by region, by topic. And so you can learn about girls' education in Pakistan or access to clean water in Malawi or any number of topics like that. The students are the ones choosing their own topics, which is partly what makes the briefing so great, because the students' interests or passion for these problems are what drive the research. But they do really intense deep dives and cite hundreds of sources in these papers typically. But they're written to be very accessible and useful to anybody who wants to learn more about a topic.
There's so much information available to us if we just make the effort to look for it. And it all goes back to what we talked about in the last episode, right? If you want to solve an issue, it's important to understand it first. And if you've done a little research into an issue, you can recognize when the science supports a charity's intervention and when it doesn't. Now, if there's one thing that you take away from this episode, this is it. It turns out that there are charities that literally just exist to vet other charities. I know. Please hold your applause. What a time to be alive. These are a great place to start when deciding where to donate. Both Jill and Aaron recommended some great vetting organizations. They do the work for you. Here's what Jill had to say.
The shortcuts that the Ballard Center actually uses for social impact partners, external partners, organizations that we work with, are organizations like the Skoll Foundation, Schwab Foundation, Ashoka, Echoing Green. These are all kind of the luminary names. Their work exclusively is to do all that calculation for you, right? They're looking at finances, distribution of donor dollar within the organization and outside to the actual intervention. They're looking at best practices, and they're kind of putting their stamp of approval on the best of the best out there.
We'll drop these names in the episode description, too, so you can look them up. But here they are again. The Skoll Foundation, the Schwab Foundation, Ashoka, and Echoing Green. And each of these vetting organizations vets organizations a little differently, so it's good to look in a number of places. Aaron Miller also mentioned a vetting organization called GiveWell.
There are resources now that are being developed to make this easier. There's a big, well-known organization called GiveWell that recommends high-impact charities based on their research. And all of those organizations they recommend are safe bets. And so if you don't want to do the time, but you want to dedicate some money, pick any GiveWell organization and you'll be doing good work.
It's nice to know the next time I vet a charity, I can look at these vetting organizations to see how my charity of choice stacks up. But before we go, I'd like to bust one last myth, and that's that a charity shouldn't spend any money on anything that's not its intervention because a charity isn't like a regular business. Intuitively, we think, well, I'm donating money for orphans in Peru. I'm not donating money so this nonprofit can put up billboards or so its employees can take time off. But Chris Yaden pointed out that the nonprofit sphere has something to learn from the for-profit sphere.
People that start charities do it because they're passionate and have big hearts, but they also need to develop the business sense and develop the maturity on the business side to make sure that they're doing it well. And we could mature on that side, on the charity side, in really enhancing our business acumen, taking lead from what a lot of for-profits do to help us mature how we approach our actual business, because it is a business.
I admire Chris's humility in saying that the nonprofit world can learn from the for-profit world. This reminds me of a TED Talk by Melinda Gates about what nonprofits can learn from Coca-Cola, which, if you haven't seen, it's really amazing. But the gist of it is that nonprofits can learn a lot from successful for-profit businesses like Coca-Cola. Okay, so what does that have to do with us ordinary people who just want to know where to donate? Well, if you can see that a nonprofit is spending money on advertising or paying their staff competitive wages, those aren't necessarily red flags. They can actually be green flags. Spending money on advertisements is an investment to bring in more donors. Paying higher salaries attracts people who are really good at what they do. These are things that successful businesses do. And if this is a social impact organization that makes a real impact, the success of the organization means that they'll be able to expand to have even more impact and change even more lives. Now you might be thinking, I'd like to donate sometime in the future when I just have more money and I can make a really big donation. You know what I'm talking about, like with one of those big ginormous checks that are longer than I am tall, you know? Like that would be very dramatic and very fun to be able to present to somebody, right? With a significant amount. And I wonder, are those just for show or is it legal tender? Like, could you even cash those? But my point is that right now, I don't know if I can donate in any way that really matters. And I know I've felt this way before too, but I'd like to end on this from Chris. Rather than focusing on that dollar amount or how big that check is, he focuses on having an attitude of generosity.
You know, I think everybody can do it their own way. I think what I'm going to do is share a story that's really inspiring to me of our founder, Shalane Maxfield, and has really impacted my own family. She has a huge giving heart and at this point can give millions and millions of dollars. But she was giving long before she had any money. And for her, that started with a plate of cookies for neighbors. And she'll often tell this story that before I had the ability to give financially, I still wanted to give. And that story has really impacted me and actually adjusted something I've done as a father and grandfather. And as I kind of internalize that story, you know, I've had in my mind, well, yeah, when I get to retirement, I'll be able to give more to charity myself, right? But I was like, no, I need to give now, and I need to give what I can. So what I can give or what another person can give may not be millions. Maybe it's a few dollars, but I can still give. And the thing I've learned being in the philanthropy space is people that give generously have always given generously. The numbers just changed based on their capacity to give, but the fact that they gave generously has always been there. So if I wait for something to give, I'm actually probably not going to give. I need to learn to give now.
I need to learn to give now. I know that I could do better at this. As a Christian, I believe that it is my responsibility to help my neighbors. And if all I can give is the widow's mite, well, you know, I have it on good authority that that's enough. I'm so grateful for Aaron, Jill, and Chris for sharing their insights with us. I've learned so much from them on how to know if a charity is really doing good. It's important to vet organizations before we donate to them. And I'm glad to hear that it's possible, too, even if, like me, you're a busy single mom who can't quit her day job. I think I can confidently and intentionally put my money where my mouth is. And I hope you feel the same.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Avery Stoneley, with help from Becca Hurley, Blake Morse, Erica Price, Kenny Mears, and Michael Combs, with music and post-production by Kip Merrill. Aaron Miller and Jill Piacitelli are associate directors at the Ballard Center for Social Impact. You can learn more about their work at marriott.byu.edu/Ballard or on Instagram at BYU Ballard Center. Chris Yaden is the managing director of CIPRIA, a nonprofit that provides resources to prevent and heal from sexual abuse. You can learn more about their work at cipria.org or follow them on Instagram at cipria_org. Links to all the vetting organizations mentioned in this episode can be found in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including The Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thank you for listening.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in the awe-inspiring world of nature? Listen to Constant Wonder, another great show from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. Join host Marcus Smith in riveting conversations with individuals whose lives have been touched by the Earth's beauty and mysteries. Uncover captivating stories that shed light on our planet's wonders, from history to science and beyond. If you crave enriching experiences and deeper connections with the world around you, tune into Constant Wonder. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.